Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
It's Raising the Vibration right here on LA Talk Radio. For more info on the show, Raising the Vibration Radio, LATalkRadio.com, RaisingTheVibrationRadio.com. The movement that started it all, I Am Raising the Vibration of the Nation and the World, is at IAmRaisingTheVibration.com, and now at RaisingTheVibration.org. Big announcement that I haven't even made yet, but I just gave you the website, so you have a little bit of a preview there. Every week on the show, I feature people that I love that really are always asking, what can I do to make the world a better place? And my guest tonight is running late. He is on his way. He is a wonderfully talented giver back, actor, writer, spiritual man. He was with me last night at the Improv for my 23rd radio anniversary live on stage. He is, amongst many things, the star of the classic television show What's Happening. The wonderful Ernest Thomas is on his way. Filling in until he gets here is my wonderful friend Lydia Cornell, who did my daily show, The Sheena Metal Experience, today. Of course, you know her from many, many things. Also actress and author and television developer and star of Too Close for Comfort. And you're going to come back and do one of these
and
with me.
And Curb Your Enthusiasm recently.
And Curb Your Enthusiasm recently.
I'm actually going to host. I'm going to pretend I'm Ernest right now. I'm going to speak a little lower.
I'm
Ernest.
You'd have to speak a lot lower if you're Ernest,
because
that man has a deep voice.
He's got a sexy deep voice.
He's a sexy man.
Sexy man, babe.
So while you're filling in for him, and I appreciate you doing so, thank you, and you know how bad I want to get you back on the show. When did you learn the importance of giving back?
After suffering through self-centered fear for so long that it was like, when you're in agony and you realize... When did I learn it? I think it was the year I got sober, actually, because I hit bottom. I hit rock bottom. But I've always been someone who loves other people. I have compassion for animals. You can tell when someone's a psychopath or a sociopath. They don't have empathy, or they put it on. They fake it.
Yeah.
I cry at the Zoloft commercial with that little cartoon egg.
Aww.
I cry at little hurt people. I cannot stand anyone in pain.
I can't watch like that. What was that movie that came out this year? Was it A Dog's Life? About the dog keeps reincarnating. And I'm like, I can't.
No.
I can't even watch the commercial.
I couldn't watch
I'm
that
like, what? A dog dies at some point? And then I lose it.
Me too. I don't... There's no possible way to get through this earth and this earthly life and not weep for humanity.
Yeah.
And all we have to learn not to weep. We have to learn that there's... Everyone has their own higher power,
yeah,
and their own path,
yep,
in life. And I lost my baby brother. He died of a drug overdose when I was first sober in 1994.
Oh, honey, I'm so sorry.
And he was a concert pianist. He was the most handsome kid you've ever seen. And I found his body.
Oh, honey.
And I was only 6 months sober, and it was one of those things where he just tried drugs three times, hard drugs three times, and it was over.
Yeah, it happens, right?
That happens. And I never thought I could get through that. But because I stayed sober and I had a spiritual path I was on, so many people, I spoke at the log cabin, hundreds of people came to his memorial service, strangers. One young boy said, I will never do drugs again because of what happened, what your brother did to you.
That's wonderful.
And he was hiking. He hiked from a rehab center in Hollywood all the way to Franklin Canyon in a suit. I picked him up on the way, and there were people. You never know what you... Lives are changed often by... the suffering of others.
And by just sharing the story.
Sharing the story.
My mother was such a private person, a person who had a very bad childhood, very Irish, that whole idea of you never let your ass hang out, you act like everything's okay, not with me, but with public. And after she got older and I was doing more and more years on the radio, one day she was like, oh, kid, I don't care what you tell people. She's like, I don't give a shit what you tell people. I'm old and almost everybody I know is dead anyway, so say what you want.
Right.
Especially after my father died. Then she was like, I don't care, just tell. So I've been very open since her death about how I feel, about who she was. And every time I do one of these shows at the Improv, it would be impossible for me to get up in front of a crowd of 200 people and not share some of her wisdom.
Wow.
Even just last night, I told a story about how I was wearing a shirt she sent me that I thought was so ugly. And then I saw it in the closet last night and thought, I'm going to wear that shirt because she loved it. And I'm amazed at how many emails and texts I get from people saying, thank you for the stories about your mother.
Oh,
your mother, hearing about your mother made me want to call my mother. And I was on the phone with my best friend today and I said, I hope that from where she is, and I know she does, she now knows how much she's loved and how much
beautiful.
People love her that never met her. Because I think when she was alive, she thought, nobody gives a crap about me because she didn't have a family.
You are going to extend her legacy into
forever.
Infinity.
Yes, forever.
Right.
And this whole movement was founded because of her on her
that
birthday.
That is so beautiful.
So it's all for her. And I hope that, because people needed to know how amazing she was. Because when people come up to me and say, oh, you really move me, and I love this that you said, and this moved me, and I love your show, it's all because of her.
Wow.
If there hadn't been
did
a her...
Did you know that growing up?
Yes.
Were you always appreciative and grateful?
Yes.
By the way, gratitude is the sincerest
yes.
form of prayer. It's the quickest way to get out of depression
yes.
is to list five things you're grateful for. I have a friend who's blind, and she became blind late in life.
Okay.
In her late 40s.
Okay.
And she had to learn to live alone, and stunningly beautiful woman, and give up these other dreams she'd had. And every day I look at her and I go, she walks with grace and dignity through this world,
yeah.
being blind. And I have the right to complain over my fingernail breaking, or,
yeah.
I didn't finish writing something on time, or I had a fight with a friend. Nothing.
Yeah.
When you list your what to be grateful for.
Yeah.
Grateful for my ability to hear, to walk, to think. To be resilient.
Absolutely.
To come up with something positive to think about.
Absolutely.
And I think it can go both ways. You had a mother that gave you all that beautiful
Absolutely.
Wisdom.
Because nobody had given it to her.
Wow.
So when she had me, she decided my life was going to be different. It was not going to be an extension of her life.
But see, I had the opposite kind of experience of a parent, but I became kinder because of that, too.
Right.
So it works. I think only the good is real.
Well, your kids probably got what I got.
Mm-hmm.
Because you had it rough, so you went the opposite.
The opposite. So I'm the most loving mother.
My mom was, too, yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever I wanted, whatever I needed, I never felt, even now that she's dead, I never feel like she's not in my corner. I never feel like not supported.
Oh, really?
Never one time when I was alive.
Wow.
And we had fights and we bickered about things occasionally, very rarely, but we did. But I never felt like she wasn't on my side. I always tell the story that when I was
wow,
a kid,
lucky
and
you.
My friends
lucky
were scared
you.
They would get in trouble at school, and they would come home and their parents would kill them. I was scared I would get in trouble at school, and I would go home and tell my mother, and she would go back to the school and kill the teacher.
Yeah.
Because it was
yeah.
always like, what?
It was always taking
and
up
she,
to
you.
You
know, she was this beautiful
wow.
Scorpio, so I always felt like I was in the cave, and she had the stingy tail out, and she was protecting me from everything. It was
well,
like
that's where you get your confidence.
Living under a dragon's wing, you always felt protected.
Wow, that's a beautiful one.
And so I was a teenager, so yes, people would say to me, I love this and I love that. And I would always say, if you like anything about me, thank my mother.
Wow, what
because
a great legacy.
I am just the extension of her.
Was quite
and
the
she
opposite
would
in
never
life.
Said that. She always said, oh, honey, you just came out the way. She would always say, honey, that's so beautiful that you say that. But the truth is, you just came out the way you came out, and I tried to just stay out of the way and let you be who you were. But
what
that's not
true. What
a great
woman. Wow.
Not true. So much of it was her.
Wow.
It is this idea of always being in service, always giving back.
That
putting
is the
tenfold
thing.
Into life what you hope to get out of it. Loving and respecting everybody equally from the time I was born. If I had a friend who was differently abled, who was a different religion, who was different ethnicity, she would send me out to spend time with their families. When
God,
my friends
evolved.
First started coming out of the closet, our dear friend Paul Belsito,
mm-hmm.
when he first came out, he lived at my house. At one point, three gay boys lived in our living room.
Don't tell anyone he's gay. Are you sure everyone knows?
Just kidding. Honey, everybody knew in 1986.
Believe me, I know.
He's just looking for new people that don't know. It's like for him, it's like finding one more diamond that hasn't been mined.
Exactly.
There's but can no you imagine doubting. In Orange County in the 80s what that was like? He was the first person I knew to come
Did
out.
Did he go through a lot of
oh,
bullying?
Yeah.
Was he bullied?
Sure.
Wow.
By everybody. And it was hard on his family. His parents, it took them a while to come around to it. They're lovely and wonderful now.
I love his parents.
But not my mother. My mom was like, tell him to come here. Tell him to live here. Bring
him
over here.
You're so blessed. You're so lucky. Yeah.
She was running a hostel for beautiful gay boys. And I remember one day, her standing at the sink washing dishes, and she was washing them so hard, she was always breaking them. And she said, I just can't believe that you would throw away a beautiful child over something as insignificant as who they sleep
exactly.
with.
Exactly. Exactly.
But, you know, in Orange County at that time, it was very Christian. It
but
was
that's
very,
the opposite
very
of Christian.
See, I know.
No, no,
I
no.
Know.
This there is someone has perverted Christianity.
Human
to
Christian,
be the opposite
not
of
Christ
itself.
Christian.
But they don't, here's something that I came up with. I've never heard anyone saying that. You get these messages sometimes when you listen, right?
Uh-huh.
I used to write articles on Christianity, not knowing why, because I was a little upset at the upside down nature of it. The Christianity that's political
right.
is the opposite of true Christianity.
Right.
But the Ten Commandments, it seems to be they're focusing on the Old Testament, the Ten Commandments, which is Mosaic law. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not steal.
Right.
Thou shalt not commit adultery. Why shouldn't you? Until you have the law of love, the Sermon on the Mount has to be fulfilling that law. You can't easily follow the Ten Commandments without the law of love. Because you love your neighbor, because
yeah.
you love your wife, because you will not steal from your neighbor. Unless you have the law of Christ's law, who brought the Sermon on the Mount in the New Testament, you can't fulfill the old law very well. You can only do it through harsh punishment.
Right.
There's no reason behind it.
No.
Until Christ comes, and that's why Christianity is the softer, easier way. It's the love. But these modern-day political Christians are like the Pharisees. They've perverted the very beauty of Christ's teachings.
Yes,
I don't agree. Get it. I don't understand it.
Well, and you know, to me, I get just as sad when friends of mine who have left the church for whatever reason, and it's understandable why they did, suddenly they hate everything. I mean, I was at a friend's
yeah.
house once who's gay, and I said something about at a party about Jesus being groovy, and they basically said, this is not a house we ever say that word, and they
what?
Never invited me back.
Because you said Jesus was cool?
I said Jesus was groovy.
Oh
I do think Jesus was groovy.
Jesus is groovy. He's the ultimate hippie.
I think if Jesus was alive now, he would be going to all the good gay parties, hanging out with people, and not caring who
because
you were.
Because he said never throw stones.
Yeah.
Never throw stones.
He's a friend of mine, my friend's neighbor owns the Psychic Eye bookstores, and she's always painting all the ceramic stuff that you see in the stores in her garage. And when I'm leaving their house for dinner in Huntington Beach, I see her in her garage. And this thing she's been doing lately is she takes these big 4-foot-high statues of Jesus and paints them rainbow.
Oh, beautiful.
And something about rainbow Jesus, man, because that's what I think Jesus
cool.
was, rainbow
totally.
Jesus. Everybody was okay. I mean, the
he
disciples...
He actually said, take the coat off your back and give it to the man who asks for it.
Yeah.
Pour heaping coals on your head if you've hurt someone's feelings.
Yes.
Talk about a snowflake.
It was all community, connection, and love. That's
all.
What the New Testament is.
It's never judge your brother or your neighbor.
People have done things with it. And people tend to believe more what people have done than to actually pick up a Bible and
they
learn about Jesus.
They never read the red letters, the actual words out of his mouth. That
I know.
It's unbelievable.
I know. It's sad. And then they live devoid of any spirituality. And that makes me sad.
The hardest thing in the world, the most divine concept, is to love your enemy, to actually send love to someone who's persecuting you, hating you, looking down on you. Actually, it's hard for me to do it toward the people that I think are the elitists that are condemning the gays and the poor
yeah.
and the homeless and the people who are on welfare. They put them in this category of trash. Those people, it's hard for me to love, but I'm called to love them too.
It's hard for me to do it with people who are purposely working with the dark
right.
to tear people apart.
Right, exactly.
The sociopaths, the borderlines, the narcissists.
The greedy.
The ones who are making people want to kill themselves, making people feel weak, making people feel less than.
Or taking away even the tiny amount of social services they might have.
Yeah, it's hard for me to send love there,
yeah.
but I'm learning.
But you're supposed to. The hardest thing is to love those, the ones that are hard to love. I've had some wonderful success with actually turning the other cheek with people like that, and they have come around. They've changed. They've actually come around.
That's wonderful, right?
Yeah,
it's
it
so
is
important.
Wonderful. It's shocking.
So for you, I mean, you're a vibration raiser just naturally. That's just organically in you now.
Thank you. I try, but sometimes I forget.
What are things that are still hard for you?
My own loving myself enough and not being a perfectionist. The worst thing is this hammer over my head, that it's an invisible hammer I have, going, you're not good enough, you're not doing it good enough. That when I'm writing, I can't just let it go and let it flow because I'm trying to perfect that sentence and that paragraph, and I'm afraid to give my work out to these people that are waiting to read it. Right now, tonight, is my job is to turn it over and give it to people who are going to judge it and read it and then sell it for me.
Right.
And I really know it's good because I didn't write it. You know very well when the muse is visiting you and you're not writing.
Yes.
Your ego isn't writing this.
Yes.
My ego's involved when I'm overworking it too much.
Okay.
When I'm not letting it go, it's me, my little primitive mind, monkey mind.
All right.
Worrying how I'm going to look.
Okay.
Worrying that I'm not perfect. Worrying about a flaw. And that, it's like, I talked to a therapist once, a practitioner, a healing practitioner, who said, train your mind like a dog. Train it. You wouldn't let your dog pee all over the furniture. Don't let your mind wander around peeing on your dreams. And the definition of a cynic, they were the dog men that peed on statues. They peed on works of art in ancient Greece.
Okay.
Cynics. So a cynic is someone who pees on people's dreams.
Okay.
Okay? I hate cynics because they don't see the positive in everything. I don't mean to hate the people who tear down
things you're trying to do. I like satirists.
Oh, I love satire.
I don't like cynics. Right, right. I like people who look at the world from that skewed perspective and can have a sense of humor about it.
Me too.
But
I love
cynics
satirists.
Are like those people with no sense of humor.
They always put you down. They always they kill hope. A lot of them kill hope. But here's the thing with me. I'm just such a perfectionist, and I'm ready. I'm going to let it go tonight. I'm going to let that go.
Good.
Being with you is so refreshing.
Thank you.
I feel like I can finally let go one of my darkest character defects.
Let it go.
Perfectionism.
Perfectionism is a sign of intelligence. It's a sign of having a 360 perspective and having awareness of what's going on around you. But like all good things, there's a bad thing that follows behind it. And the bad thing of that is that you have to be careful that you don't let your... It's wonderful to want perfectionism in everything you do if you're not allowing it to stunt your growth and you're moving along the path.
There's a really funny joke in a movie called The Santa Claus, and I think it's Vince Vaughn and the dwarf. There's an elf in the bathroom washing his hands, and he goes, I'm so insecure, I always tell the punchline of a joke first because I'm afraid no one will wait around for the boring part.
Oh, it's just fantastic.
And that's how my writing... I'm like so afraid that they're not going to be scintillated and jazzed by my writing that I put all my best stuff on the first page.
Right.
Pretty soon I have like 50 pages trying to be number one. And I just need to let people develop the story.
Yeah.
I don't need to like slay them with my scintillating wit in the first paragraph.
But it's okay to do that and then have it go back a little bit. And then it comes forward a little bit.
Right.
Then it goes back a little
bit.
Then it comes forward
reader.
A little bit.
Right.
That's completely... It's okay to take people on a journey where it doesn't have to always be funny. It doesn't
have to always be
interesting.
Yeah. Right.
Sometimes it can just be heartfelt. How long have you been writing?
My whole life. Back in the days when we were all... I don't know. You never did cocaine or any of those things?
Never.
Way back in the early days of Scarsdale High School, we had an SDS president. People would hand drugs out in the hallways, and you would take whatever they handed you. There was an era where we were just experimenting.
But that was freedom. By the time I got to be old enough to do that, everybody was dying.
Right.
And there was AIDS, and there was not fun to indulge anymore.
Exactly.
I grew up at a different time. I always say if I had been 10 or 15 years older than I am, if I had a time machine, I would go back to 1978, go to Studio 54, and blow off everyone's back.
Right,
but
right,
I grew up at a different time, and it just didn't seem... There didn't seem to be a reason to do it if it wasn't fun, if it was just going to be destructive.
Exactly. I got through those years without doing hard drugs until later, but... I mean, cocaine. In L.A., that's where I discovered that. When
In Los Angeles you discovered cocaine? What?
But I used to write... when I was kind of in that phase of drugginess, and I have reams of poetry and essays and sociological points of view, and I used to write like a crazy person. And then I sat down and wrote this book on the assassin of Trotsky, and it came out like it was written by Margaret Atwood. And Margaret Atwood's agent took the book and said, this is brilliant writing.
Wow.
So I always knew I was a writer because I had a passionate point of view and a descriptive ability. And I was like turned on by the assassin. I was so motivated to write the story of this assassin and the Oedipal complex with his mother. And
interesting.
That was the first big book I wrote.
Now, do you think that was a past life thing?
Maybe.
I had a guest on the show.
I don't know.
On Thursday, on my daily show, The Sheena Metal Experience. And he, having never written before, wrote this whole story about the Turks and the ancient Greeks.
Yes, that has to be.
This whole historical thing. And he gave it to somebody who is a historian of that time period to read. And she sort of looked at it and said, how did you know any
right,
of this?
Right, that's weird.
So for me, being a spiritual person, I always think, is there a past life thing that you need to work through? And for whatever reason, it comes up. And then, wow, this is a story. It's like you know because in another time you lived through it.
Maybe. It must be.
I have that about Victorian England.
Wow.
I have it about the Civil War period. I mean, when I was a baby, like 1-2 years old, I was asking my mother, following her around, asking her questions about Abraham Lincoln. She finally
bought
me an Encyclopedia Britannica from a salesperson that came to the door, so I would shut up. Like, here's a thing of encyclopedias. Learn about here's all the books on Lincoln you want. Just learn. And then when I started reading when I was 3, then it was, can we go see this? Can we go to Springfield? Can we go to Kentucky and see where he was born?
That's so cool.
Can we go to the White House? Can we go to the monument? And by the time I was 5, I'd been all those places. But, you know, most kids are like, Legoland, Santa's Village.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh, can I go see the blood on the pillow where he was shot? I'm sorry, that's a weird...
That is very, very weird.
That's
so,
a weird
past life
thing.
So what did you discover? Have you had a past life experience with Lincoln?
I don't know. I've always had a Lincoln thing. As a matter of fact, I have friends who are Civil War reenactors, and they do a thing...
I love that. I want to do one of those.
They do a thing Labor Day weekend called Civil War Days in Huntington Beach. And I went last year for the first time, and they have a wonderful Lincoln who's actually going to be on my daily show on Wednesday.
Oh, my God.
And I walked up to him, and I couldn't talk to him. It's like my eyes dropped, and I mean, it's just, that's a thing, right?
Wow,
I mean,
bizarre.
I can talk to anybody. Like, I have celebrities on my show every day, and
maybe
I couldn't talk to a Lincoln reenactor.
You are Lincoln.
I don't know. I'd hope if I was Lincoln, I could look at Lincoln and not be shy.
Maybe you're his love.
But
the love of his life.
Something happened.
Maybe you were the love of his life.
Something happened.
And you're too shy to look him in the eye because
something,
it's unrequited love.
I was so bashful with that. So the guy's going to come in here on Wednesday.
God.
He's probably going to be like, who
that
is this
hilarious
weirdo? So he's going to come in not as Lincoln, so I can talk to him.
You're going to be shaking and blushing.
But I'm telling you,
you were one of his girlfriends. You were
and
the paramour.
And it was that way when I was when I was tiny.
That's weird.
Tiny. So maybe you had the same thing with that time period.
I became obsessed with the Oedipal relationship with the mother, and she fought at the front against Franco.
Okay.
She was the first guerrilla fighter.
Oh, wow.
Maria Caridad del Rio Mercader. And her son, Ramon Mercader, who became Jacques Mornard, he was like Riley, Ace of Spies, a chameleon who could change his identity at will. And then he seduces a Jewish virgin named Sylvia Agaloff. It's a trio.
Okay.
Three main characters in Brooklyn Trotsky Party. The seduction of Sylvia is more or less the story. But
that's kind of an out there thing.
It's out there. It's weird.
I mean, you do have Russian heritage.
Yeah, my father was born in Russia.
So you do come from that, but still not, that's an odd thing to.
But I was writing a book against Stalin about the kind of communism Stalin. I'm so sick of people throwing the word communist around these days as if anyone who's a Bernie supporter was a communist. I wasn't. I was definitely a Hillary supporter.
I was just waiting for you to say what you were going to say. I didn't mean to start smiling.
The Bernie, there's a lot of people throwing the word socialism around.
Well, I think he said he was a socialist.
But no, he didn't mean it that way. He meant socialism right now in America is corporate socialism. We give corporate welfare. We're giving big oil companies tax breaks.
Sure.
And they're using the road and tearing up the highway with their petroleum trucks. They should pay taxes. Whereas the socialism we have here is socialized. What do we pay for that we all use together? What's the common good? Police, fire, right, military, clean water, safe highways, public parks, public libraries, and public schools.
Right.
Those should be socialized.
Right.
Words,
and
share the burden.
I'm a huge fan of the Roosevelts, both
right, the New Deal.
Franklin and Eleanor. But the New Deal has socialist qualities too.
Everything good in every society has to have a shared burden, which is what insurance companies do, by the way.
Right.
They spread the burden out by collecting all our money, and then they they you use that pool of money.
They give it to the people that need it.
That need it. So that's what social. They're using it to an extreme.
Right.
To alt-right is using that as a word that's dirty.
I agree, but I
and
also
they're
think
calling certain people communists in
I
the
also
wrong tone.
I think that there are people who think that they're communists or are communists that really believe in a world where, you know, everyone gets the same stuff.
Where we share everything, and where you don't get any income at all. That is pure communism.
And the problem
Marxist.
With that is that there's always somebody in there who's running the show that's getting everything.
Exactly. Always.
It never is in all of the books about idealized utopian societies.
Yeah.
At some point, it always goes ass over tea kettle.
Exactly.
And it's always because somebody then decides they're in charge. So and then
Stalin,
they get ugly.
So in Stalin's communism, he killed, he was right. the most paranoid lunatic.
Yeah.
He stayed up all night, and if you put a glass of coffee cup, a coffee or water on his face on a newspaper, he had spies in almost every village. They would find out that you defaced him.
Yeah.
And he would pick you up in a bread truck and take you to Siberia.
Wow.
He was such a megalomaniac. He was such a not a real communist, but that's the communist era we're most familiar with. The Stalin era.
Wow.
Which is like fascist dictatorship. Right now, the words are all getting...
Yeah, it's hard.
Mushed. Nobody quite understands the terms they're talking about.
Wow.
Like the other day, my girlfriend who stopped talking to me...
Uh-oh.
I simply defined National Socialist for her.
Yeah.
Because she wanted to put a picture of Hitler Youth burning books at Huntington Beach.
Oh.
She goes, I'm going to a book burning. I'm going to a book burning to burn degenerate literature from liberals. And I went, wait a minute.
I saw that in Huntington Beach.
You cannot put a picture of Austrian Hitler Youth wearing those suspenders and those shorts that's in the Holocaust Museum. You cannot join a page like that. And I warned her. I said, you can't have that picture up. It's very dangerous. Before the Charlottesville rally.
Right.
And she said, no, it's a good thing. I'm going to use the picture. And I thought, oh, gosh, Genevieve, you've got to be careful. And she thinks the word National Socialism means socialism. And I said, no, National Socialism is Adolf Hitler's party,
yeah.
the Nazi party.
Right.
So there's a confusion of terms, and I want to be loving about it.
Yes.
But she thinks I'm being arrogant because I simply know history.
Yeah.
I'm considered arrogant for knowing
No,
history.
It's not arrogant. It's going to a Nazi book burning. Is that's not being
she
smart.
She got tricked into it by skinheads. And she thinks they're good people. Anyway.
Well, okay, so let me tell you what I learned when I lost a friend to this year.
Okay.
Somebody who thinks that skinheads are good people.
Right.
Somebody who thinks that Nazis are good people. Somebody that thinks that KKK people are good people.
Right.
That is somebody that, whether we want to admit it or not, there is something inside of them, Lydia, that resonates with that message.
Exactly.
And that message is not okay.
No. It's not okay.
You know what I mean? And that's not politics. Being a hater, being a troll, being a hater, hating groups of people,
yeah.
thinking people should be annihilated off the earth because of their skin color, their religion, their sexuality, their gender preference, that is not a political affiliation.
No.
That's just pure hate.
And it should be illegal to hate when you have weapons in your hand and you're allowed to speak. You can't shout fire in a crowded theater. That's illegal.
Yeah.
So you should not be allowed. No. This kind of hate speech should not be tolerated.
You shouldn't be allowed to march around with tiki torches beating people up.
No.
Look, you want to protest with tiki torches? That's your business. But the minute someone starts hurting someone or driving cars into someone, that's when you have given away your right to
be
able to
do that. On public park land
right.
that's taxpayer funded.
And, you know, we live in a country where you have a right to be a Nazi if you want to be. You have a right to be in the Klan if you want to be. And I love the freedoms of America.
Yeah.
And some of that is, unfortunately, that you have to deal with all kinds of people because freedom for you means freedom for everyone.
Yeah.
However, when those freedoms then become people becoming physically, emotionally, sexually, spiritually abused,
yeah.
then it's not okay anymore.
No.
And it's not right. And it's not illegal to burn a book.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think it should be.
God,
but it's a spiritual crime.
Right.
It's not illegal to burn a book. But anybody who would go to a book burning. But yeah. I am also not, and here we go, here I go. I am not a fan of the over-political correctness
I'm
that
not
takes
either,
To Kill
way.
A Mockingbird and Uncle Tom's Cabin and books like that out of circulation. Because I think people need to Read classic literature. Not every time was our time. If we forget the past, we will repeat the past.
Do people actually want to take Uncle Tom's Cabin and To Kill a Mockingbird, my two favorite book? My great-great-grandmother
wrote Uncle
Tom's
N-word
Cabin.
In them.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. You didn't know about that? And it's a whole bunch
I
of books.
I forgot about that. No, that political
that.
Correct,
it's,
that
it's a whole bunch
nuts.
Of stuff. It's not just those two. It's Tom Sawyer. Because of the way that he was treated, the African-American gentleman, or Huckleberry Finn. There's a lot of it.
You cannot do that because that was the time. At the time, those words were not wrong to use in literature, and at least there was not the fire around it.
Yeah.
That is really crazy.
Well, but it's...
I'm not a fan of big... I'm not a big political correctness fan myself.
I think it's nice to a point. There's a reason for it. But people over abuse it. And if you go so far with it, like if you go super, super, super left, you're almost touching the right.
Exactly.
If you become a fanatic on either end, it's trouble. And getting rid of books is getting rid of books, whether you burn them or you politely make them go away.
It's censorship.
And I'm not
it's
a fan
bizarre.
Either way.
Yeah.
Censoring people's art, their art exhibits, their plays, I just don't think it should be done. Look, if you write a play and it's got a bunch of controversial stuff in it and nobody wants to go see it, then they just won't go see it, and that's their right.
What do you think of that controversy a few years ago with Paula Deen, a cooking host, for having used the N-word back in the day? She gets fired.
I'm not surprised. The woman cooks with a pound of lard. Everything has a pound of... You know what you need to do? You get one piece of chicken, and then you get two cups of lard.
but she got fired and lost her franchise for using the N-word 30 years earlier. Wasn't that it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's right that she did it. But
no,
I don't think that it's...
I'm just curious what people think in general. If
I mean,
they
what
think
if everybody
overly...
knew everything you had ever said or done in your entire life? How many different people would you be in trouble with?
That's an interesting thing. And I wrote this little thing about... I got mad at somebody for lying to me, and I went and I told my spiritual advisor. He lied. He lied about getting us into the movie theater by buying senior citizen tickets, and we weren't senior citizens. And she said, so? You used to do illegal drugs. Were you so perfect? You lied about your age. And I go, just by a couple years. And she goes, what makes you think... What character defects of his, why is that worse than the things you've done? You have to look at yourself.
Yeah.
You know, we are very judgmental. We love to point fingers in this country.
Well, and we have agendas.
Yeah, we do
have
agendas.
And agenda. We like to do things that foster our agenda.
Yeah.
And in a crazy way. And there is craziness on both sides of our political spectrum. And I have had people criticize me for admitting that I supported Hillary Clinton in the 2008 Democratic primary because they're fans of Obama and they think that me saying that takes away from him, even though I will tell you I voted for him twice in 2008.
I voted for him
in 2012, but I supported her first and she was my candidate. And if you say that, the Obama fans jump all over you like you rehung Jesus
Seriously?
On the cross.
They still do?
That's not okay.
So wait, you're talking about early on when he was running against Hillary.
In the primary, I voted for her.
Yeah.
And if I say that or that I supported her, then people are like, oh, yeah, by Obama. And I'm like, I'm not negating Obama in any way.
Why are people so opinionated?
I mean, if
opinions are not from the highest source.
If I watch one show and don't watch another show, it doesn't mean I hate that show. I mean,
exactly.
You're allowed to support things, but we've become so polarized as a people.
Isn't that weird?
That everyone, you have to get on the bandwagon with everyone else. It's like a Stepford mentality.
It's weird, isn't it? It's
and
so
now
stifling.
With these folks that love our current president, they're kind of like Stepford
Fanatical
people too.
Stepford people, yeah, they're crazy.
And what they're doing, and we talked about this a little bit when you were on My Daily Show an hour or so ago, is they're opening up a door for all of the fanatical right wingers to come in and go, see who's oppressing him.
Oh,
you know
God.
What you really should do is burn this book.
Libtards. If I get called a
God,
libtard one
too.
More time, I actually come from a real thoughtful point of view where I studied deeply both sides. I studied the history of both parties. I had a radio show, a progressive radio show that was on live every morning in Vegas during morning drive. My co-host and I interviewed every senator, almost every senator, every representative, the Attorney General Gonzalez. We interviewed the whole Bush White House during the Iraq War. I interviewed John Edwards, Elizabeth Edwards. I went through all these scandals. And I found out deep stuff. I mean, we interviewed Charlie Savage, who won the Pulitzer Prize for the book about the Iraq War. About the Iraq War was initially Iraq, it was called Operation Iraqi Liberation,
okay,
which spells oil.
Okay.
And Cheney changed the name quickly to Operation Iraqi Freedom.
Right.
Because he didn't want anyone to know he was
really
going there.
He didn't want anyone to know he wanted oil.
He went in there with
everyone
all the top.
Everyone wants oil.
They all
even
went,
Paula Deen, she just calls it lard.
Yeah, exactly. But they went in with Exxon, all the big oil companies, uh-huh, to get the oil out of Iraq. And that was part of the amorality of that war. So I know a lot of stuff about how all this started, all this mess we're in now. I could actually write an entire timeline for you to show how and why everyone's confused right now.
Yeah.
It's a Tower of Babel. But what's it going to get me? I just want to be happy. It's not making me happy to argue with people on Facebook about politics anymore.
I just want people to love each other. I can't fix politics. I'm sure there is corruption on both sides of the aisle.
Yeah.
I can't fix it. I'm not a politician. I'm never going to fix it. I'm never going to be a politician.
I'm never going
to. No matter how many people try to get me to, the answer is no, and that has happened lately.
Me too.
I just want people to have a better vibration. And I don't believe that raising the vibration or raising your vibration is just for somebody who votes Democrat. Because that would make me a horrible hypocrite.
Exactly.
Peace, love, kindness, and unity for everybody, except Republicans. That would make me the worst vibrational motivator ever. You can't cut half a country out and say these people don't deserve to be happy and start using terms like us and them.
No, that's not
getting us anywhere. And if you look at a history book, which I think some people never have, you see all these situations, Lydia, where us and them led to bad things. It starts with us and them, and it ends in wars.
A house divided cannot stand. We have to get together.
Abraham Lincoln.
We have to get together.
I love that you just quoted Lincoln. You know, I love that.
I forgot
that
you
just
Lincoln.
Quoted Lincoln. My spirit boyfriend. But that's stuff that we're working on every day, right? I'm working on it, too. I'm trying to find a way to live in a post-election world.
Me, too.
Still trying to love everyone while still being a proud liberal.
Yeah.
And not hiding who I am or who I vote for or who I voted for and not being ashamed of that, no matter how much bullying I've received because of it, but also telling people who have also been bullied, these people who have bullied you have a right to say what they think as Americans because that's part of our Constitution.
That's right. That's, we fought for freedom of speech.
And even though I know there's hypocrisy, I had somebody last night send me an email telling me they weren't coming to my improv show because they were there at an earlier time and they heard one of the guests say something against our current president.
You're kidding.
And that they wouldn't go somewhere where he was being talked about, not in a positive light. And I said, but I thought all of his people, you guys were so much about free speech.
Right.
I can't tell my guests what they can talk about on stage, although I never bring politics up at those shows. Sometimes people want to talk about it.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do, right? I mean, It's a strange world.
Listen,
that we're
politics
living in now.
To me, for me, I was a feminist. I
am
the
too.
Word. It came to me because I found out you can't get employed. You're not employable over the age of 40 in Hollywood if you're a woman or you were pretty as a woman. Character actors can get parts, but women over 40, the jobs drop off drastically.
Right.
You have to jump through hoops to prove that you're supple and your skin, you still look 16 and you have glossy lips and you're thin enough, good enough, perfect enough. So for me, it was a matter of survival. Politics is really just about where funding is going to go. Can we still afford a public school? Are schools going to be funded? Is there going to be any Social Security left for any of us?
Yeah.
So in other words, it's a matter of...
Are kids going to have lunches and pencils in school?
And we're a very wealthy country of billionaires who are not paying taxes at all. And all I'm trying to say is what Bernie Sanders had going, which is wonderful, is say just let the giant corporations pay their fair share, and then we would have enough
Everybody
to
should pay
fund
their fair share.
The regular social services, not the welfare people who rip off welfare. That's a myth, the welfare mom. Almost half the women I know who need food stamps are blonde, beautiful women who can't get jobs.
Yeah.
And they're single mothers. And their husbands left them. Or they were squeezed out of what was rightfully theirs. And they're not necessarily the stereotypical welfare mom.
Yeah.
Having babies on purpose. It's a very hard country to live in. A lot of people don't want to come here, and unless a corporation is giving you a job, why don't you find them?
Well, a lot of the people that I know collecting welfare are not folks of color.
Right,
and they're
not
folks that are poor. Sometimes they're folks that are just conning the system.
Right.
They're like entitled white people who have found a way to con the system. I agree there are people conning the system, and we need to weed through that.
It's mainly the Wall Street bankers that are conning.
They're all on welfare, apparently.
They're actually corporate welfare.
Corporate welfare.
We are actually subsidizing the major corporations.
Did you ever think that maybe you wanted to work at a corporation? Was there ever a time in your life where
I did for ABC Network. I was on a show for, what, 6 years?
Well, and that is a huge corporation.
I loved ABC because they're owned by Disney.
Huge
I have a little
corporation,
bit of a heartfelt
but I mean,
feeling for Disney.
Did you ever think that... That's right. You loved... You were talking in the last... When you did my daily show that you loved Disney as a child and then you woke up...
I'm a bit of a... And Jack just graduated... My son graduated Cal Arts, which was... I don't want to hear bad things about Walt Disney. Later, you hear that Disney might have been racist in some way and now
Walt
I'm thinking,
Disney?
Then it turns out that isn't true.
No, I didn't hear
it. Isn't
never
true.
Heard that.
But he founded Cal Arts, California Institute of the Arts, which
oh,
is
I didn't
his
know
Renaissance
that.
School for filmmakers, animation.
I did not know that
Herb
he founded
Alpert
that.
School of Music is there.
Wow.
And the Sharon Lund School at Disney School of Dance and Red Cat, Roy and Edna Disney, Cal Arts Theater, is our college at Disney Concert Hall. So the Disney family. Walt himself created CalArts as his Renaissance school, and during the Mary Poppins movie, he put a commercial for CalArts in the movie, in black and white. I'm going to build a 600-acre campus for the
That's
first
beautiful.
The first Renaissance school for the arts.
And what did your son study?
Graphic design.
Oh, beautiful.
It's the hardest course. It's like architecture. It's really
okay.
hard.
So he's a fine artist.
Yeah, he got his BFA.
And what does he want to do with it?
He wants to do graphic design. He's a brilliant artist. Computer graphics.
Okay.
He codes. He does virtual reality. He creates video games.
That's
he's a
beautiful.
Little, yeah, he's a little gifted.
So you always loved Disney. Then you wound up working for Disney.
But that's a big corporation. And they have their flaws.
That's true.
They have their flaws.
But that wasn't having to sit in an office every day and punch a clock.
I kind of like that, but I also love universities. I know that sounds... I love college campuses.
I do too.
Something about it.
I could be a professional student.
Yeah, me too.
If I had
forever.
Nothing to do but just get degrees forever.
And go to the... Yeah.
As a matter of fact, somebody approached me last night with the idea, because I'm thinking about getting ordained as a minister through Raising the Vibration.
My God.
The idea of actually doing like an online theology school and actually becoming a theologian. And I'm like, oh.
I wanted to go to Fuller for a while.
It'd be kind of fun to get a degree. I mean, if I could do it and fit it around here, I would love to go back to school.
Why don't you and I go together to Fuller Seminary and just go to Pasadena? It's a beautiful campus.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It's got the Gothic architecture.
I would love that.
I'd love to go to Harvard or Yale and just walk around campus and go and carry books and go to school.
You just pretend you're in school? I was born at Yale. It would be like going home. I was born at Yale Memorial.
You were born in New Haven. Yeah.
I'm a Yale baby. I just
I'm
wander
enamored
around.
Of campuses that look like Harry Potter with like Hogwarts.
Oh, but maybe that's another past life thing for you. You have an old New England-y thing.
I do.
So why didn't, when you graduated from college, or when it was time to go to college, you went to Colorado? Why not New York?
That's a stunning campus.
Someplace
Boulder, Colorado,
old.
The most beautiful campus on earth.
You know, someplace Philadelphia, Boston, a city that's old.
Because I wanted to get away from my parents as far as possible. And in those days, there were
wasn't
no
that closer than going to like...
We lived in New York.
Oh, you lived in New York?
Okay, I didn't.
Time.
I missed a whole chunk of time.
Oh, I knew you grew up in Texas. Born in
El
Texas.
El Paso, 11 years old. I go to Scarsdale, New York, the richest community in America.
Okay.
And we're not rich, nor are we Jewish. And everyone in Scarsdale is Jewish.
Okay.
Except for Frank Gifford. I met the original Frank Gifford because his original set of kids went to Scarsdale High.
Okay.
So I'm like a fish out of water. I'm the only Shiksa.
Okay.
In a Jewish community.
All right.
And I want to be Jewish in the worst way. I've always wanted to be a Jewish male comic.
Okay.
But my parents weren't supportive.
I kind of wanted to be Jewish when I was a kid, too, because I thought it was so much more interesting.
They're intellectual.
Than being a Protestant.
Yeah.
I thought being from a Jewish liberal family would be so much more interesting than
and
my Presbyterian
days,
childhood.
Yeah. Well, they were the smart intellectuals and the humorists and the comedy.
And arts donors and liberals. And I thought that, interesting.
Yeah. Jewish liberals. Very smart.
Yeah.
And they gave back to society.
Right.
They don't believe in the afterlife, so they do all their good deeds here.
Yeah.
And I wrote an article. Here's the article I wrote about the people who believe you can't go to heaven unless you declare Jesus as your Savior. So I wrote an article titled, "You mean George Burns and Gandhi aren't in heaven, but pedophile priests are on a technicality?"
Oh, no.
On a technicality. Here's George Burns, a Jew, who walks the walk of Jesus. He's the kindest, sweetest man that ever lived. Then there's Gandhi, a Hindu, who walks the walk of Jesus, is the kindest man that turns to a pacifist, just like Christ.
Yeah.
And yet they're not allowed in the Catholic version of heaven, or the evangelical version, because they didn't declare Jesus Christ their Savior, even though they walk the walk.
That's ridiculous.
They behave, they abide in love, the way he said to do.
Yes, if you walk the walk, then you...
So that's...
And if you walk the talk. No, that's ridiculous.
So that's why I wrote that article, and I thought...
So what was your spiritual revelation like? Were you always spiritual?
I was
How
raised...
How were you raised?
Okay, this is... And I'm somewhat kind of shy about it because people don't know what it is. I was raised a Christian Scientist, which is
okay.
my favorite thing
really?
In the world now.
Okay.
It's the most beautiful website. It's like mega... All over the world, more and more Christian Scientists are talking about metaphysical healings through just looking at God as love.
Okay.
But it's not Scientology, and there's people confuse it with that. Because the word science is in there. And all Mary Baker Eddy, she was 14 years old when she was paralyzed on the ice.
Okay.
This 14-year-old girl. She was a Puritan, a Quaker.
All right.
And came over in the Mayflower, her family. And
okay.
settled in Quincy or Lynn, Massachusetts. And
okay.
apparently she went ice skating and fell and cracked her spine and was paralyzed at 14. And she read the Bible in bed for a year. She
oh,
was
wow.
told she would never walk again. She read the Bible 25 times. She read the New Testament over and over, and she had a revelation about Christ's healing power. Why aren't churches doing the original healing power Christ talked about, where he healed the blind man, he healed the withered hand, he healed the lame? No one uses that healing in churches. And she was healed instantaneously from whatever got into her consciousness. She ended up getting out of her bed and walking. Then she wanted to find the proof, the science behind that. What science just means evidence and then evidence, trials, and proof.
Right.
That's what Christian Science is. It's the proof of the archaic healing power.
Okay.
And it stems from the right premise. God is love.
Okay.
And there's no opposing force. The Adam and Eve thing is a myth. There's no duality. If okay. you believe in evil and good, then you're negating the first commandment, thou shalt have no other gods before me. If you believe cancer is as big as God, and you run relay races for cancer, you just don't give it so much power.
Okay, so when you were a child, did you never see a doctor?
We did. We weren't devout. And by the okay. way, nowadays nobody is like that. You can do whatever you want.
And did
That's
you,
a myth.
Do you now as an adult, and as somebody that I consider to be...
I left it a long time
in
ago.
In some ways very metaphysical.
Yeah.
I think you're sort of a mixture. I would say you're a mixture, like I am, of like a Christ teachings of Christ, Christian, and New Age.
And I'm very New Age. I'm very spiritual. I believe in doctors. I believe everything is the hand of
sure.
help.
But do you believe in darkness? Do you believe there is darkness in the world?
Okay, I believe darkness exists if you give it power. I truly believe
okay.
if you focus,
that's
what you
very
focus
metaphysical.
On grows.
Okay,
yeah, and that darkness is here in this realm, the Mormon
okay.
realm. But there's a realm above darkness, and if you focus your eyes above to the highest thought, above the so-called dream we're in, the Adam and Eve sleep, because if you read that chapter carefully, it says, a mist covered the earth. Adam lay down, and a mist covered the earth. That's sleep. We're sleeping right now.
Okay.
If you break outside that dream membrane and you operate up here, the darkness isn't real. You diminish it by your power, by focusing on love.
I think that's beautiful.
And actually, it works to heal.
I believe that, too. I'm the guest I had on after you on my Daily Show today was a doctor who uses Eastern and Western to heal. And we talked a lot about that, as you and I did during the show. I do believe in darkness. I believe that just there is a force of dark as there is a force of light.
Mm-hmm.
And one couldn't exist without the other on the earth.
Yeah, the shadow side. Right?
And that you need to always get behind the light.
Mm-hmm.
And keep your heart and your soul and your mind and your intentions in the light and not take darkness personally.
Okay, that's good.
It's not there specifically to come after you and scare you and piss you off.
It's not personal?
It's not personal, but it is there. And there
I
are
know
people,
what you're saying. I see it.
There are people who lean towards the dark. There are people who that's where they live.
Right.
Not everybody lives in the light.
But when I stopped using cocaine, I stopped seeing cocaine users around me. I actually graduated
you also
from...
resonate to you
right.
what you're thinking about and doing.
Yeah, I mean, there's some for some reason I'm not aware of When I start focusing on the darkness, believe me, I attract it. I know that darkness exists here, for sure. But I believe our job is to not give it power, because it's like the serpent is the liar, right? A lie can't stand on its own without... It's not real. It's there, and it feels real, and the more you give it power with your thoughts, the more you go and bomb Iraq, where you bomb the Taliban, you've made them have their own country. You focus... In other words... If you resist anything too much, you make it real. You give it power against you.
Right. I do agree that. I do agree with that. But I think it's there whether you give it power or not.
Mm.
It's just you give it power and you grow.
You grow it.
And I think, have you ever heard the expression starve the dark?
Yes.
Don't feed into it. If there's darkness around you, then don't feed into it. If there are people around you who are drama or chaos inducers, do not play into it.
Yeah.
Starve them out. And I have found that for a lot of people who are rooted in drama and chaos, Lydia, sometimes the only way you get rid of them is to starve them out.
Yeah, exactly.
To just not play, not participate in the drama and the chaos. And they will naturally go away because they'll be looking for somebody who will agitate
them. It's hard because your ego gets hurt. Like, I was at a meeting this morning really early, and a guy sat next to me, and I moved his cushion over. I thought it was part of the group. I thought everyone had chairs like that. And he goes, "Hey, you touched my thing." And I went, "Oh, I'm sorry." And then I asked him the wrong question, and he got very defensive.
Yeah.
Then I got hurt inside, and I could feel I was rumbling with agony with this ego thing. Ego,
yeah.
Edging God out, EGO.
Uh-huh.
It felt like, oh, I'm back in that dark space.
Yeah.
Of course we have it.
We always
It's based
go
on
it,
ego
right?
and fear and also rebellion and defiance and all these kind of mortal realm ideas.
Yeah, and I get that way. I was in a situation earlier in the year where I got into an artistic collective because I thought it was going to be a wonderful thing, and I was helping out a friend. And it turned out to be very abusive and very ego-driven, pitting people against each other. And at those times when I see not just myself being backed against the wall, but mostly, Lydia, when I see other people being oppressed,
yeah.
I go into rebellion mode.
Me too.
And then I'm like, okay, somebody's got to be the Joan of Arc of this group, and it's going to be me.
Yeah.
And I don't like how I feel when I'm like that, because it's not in my natural go-to to be like that. But if you hit me with negativity, I will become that. And the problem is that when something like that happens and you respond in kind, then there's five or six other situations just like that waiting for you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because then the dark goes, oh, well, here's somebody who'll play with us. It's like if a bee comes around you and you swat a bee. Now, I still swat at bees because I'm terribly allergic. You swat at a bee, it'll keep coming at you. Because it'll just suddenly be like, oh, well, there's something that's moving through
exactly.
the sky, and that's interesting.
Point.
What's that? I'm going to come back. And then other bees will be like, hey, what's the swatting? We're coming too. And the next thing you know, you swat a hornet's nest, they all come out. You walk by it, don't acknowledge it, they all stay inside.
That's my point.
Yeah.
So the theory I go by, Emmett Fox, says, withdraw your attention from your enemies and they expire from neglect.
Absolutely.
Neglect them. And don't give them power.
Yeah.
And that's more or less, I think we're agreeing that...
We're absolutely agreeing.
I see darkness for sure here in this physical realm we're in. But Christian Science is a different kind of... They don't give it any validity. They look at it like an illusion that feels very real. But it really is the liar. Because there's no opposing force to good. There's really no opposing force equally powerful to good. And it says so in the Bible. I went back to the Bible to read things only to justify the things I was learning internally. If it says thou shalt have no other gods before me, then you're giving a god, you're making a god out of that thing.
Yeah, out of the bee.
Whereas it says in Genesis 1, God created everything good and in his image, and it was all good. So
you know your Bible. You really...
But it's odd because I would be accused of being a Bible thumper, and I'm not.
No, there's nothing wrong with reading the Bible.
But
I think we should all read everything.
But I didn't... to be honest with you, the things I gleaned, it's like I had a stalker with this Kelsey Grammer thing. It was a really bizarre, funny story, and I turned it into comedy. But the stalker did something tricky with us, and he was
really... You had a stalker related to Kelsey Grammer?
This Kelsey Grammer TV show I did where Kelsey and I had a man come after us.
Okay.
And he became our mutual stalker.
Oh.
And he sued Kelsey in my name. This is all going to come out in People magazine
eventually.
Oh, my
goodness.
He pretended to be a war hero. He was actually a convicted felon. I accidentally moved him into my house thinking he was a war hero who needed a heart transplant. He lied about everything. And the thing is, I caught him one day through... Something had let me see all these numbers, IP addresses, and it came out to me like the show Numbers. The numbers glowed, and I could never... I'm not a computer expert. I don't know how I could see the numbers. He was lying about his IP address, where he was texting from, and it all came together because I was given these weird revelation of these numbers. And I took it to court, and the judge said, she's right. And he went to jail. You know, they had to catch him.
Yeah.
Same thing with the Bible. I haven't really read it in depth, but things have jumped out at me, which makes so much sense. It's almost like that feeling you're being given things to look at, and you feel that, and you know that they're true.
I know we talked about this off the air, but now I'm bringing it up on the air, and maybe I shouldn't. Has anyone ever told you that you have gifts? Do you know you have gifts?
I don't like to say I believe in astrology and all that stuff, because for some reason that part of the occult feels to me...
It's not astrology, it's spiritual gifts.
Yes, somebody
astrology
said,
is just when were you born and where were the planets. Astrology is essentially a science.
Right. Someone once said, you have the ability to manifest, and I used to manifest whatever I think about.
Well, that's a gift.
Literally, right in front of me came... I was going to write a screenplay about Martha's Vineyard, and I thought, I need a Martha's Vineyard information book. And there was one delivered to me. There's nobody else got one in the whole neighborhood. Martha's Vineyard information book, delivered in the mail that very afternoon. And it had my name on it. But it happened all the time when I was in the flow.
I knew that the first night we ever spoke on the phone.
Really?
But I didn't want to say it because I just met you. Yeah, I can feel when people have gifts.
Well, what do you do with those gifts if they're not helping you get your stuff going?
I think it's you are using them. You use them with everybody you touch every day.
Wow.
You know, you've been a transformative person in a couple of my friends' lives, and you are look at how the gifts that you gave everybody from the time you got here at the studio today until 5.
Thank you.
A break while I had another guest on my show, and thank you for filling in tonight on Raising the Vibration. And you were out there just loving people and pouring love into people. That's how
against
you use
my
your
will
gifts.
Though at times I can feel my dark side going, I gotta hurry, I gotta go home and worry, I gotta go home and do. And I get that small limited being, that weird hammer,
right,
where you're not doing what you should be doing. And then the other side always rises.
I let that go. I used to have that.
Mm.
I used to be such a perfectionist.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to be so driven and focused like a straight line. I'm an Aries and we focus.
Oh, my son's an Aries.
And
what's your birthday?
April 2nd.
Oh, yeah.
And then a couple of things happened to me. One was I got in a head-on collision on the 405 freeway, and I had a near-death experience.
Wow.
And when I came back after feeling what it was like to be home and feeling what it was like to be in a place where there is no stress, there's no worry, there's only love, there's no physical pain, there's no emotional pain, there's no spiritual pain, I came back and I stopped thinking of everything, Lydia, as a line and started thinking of everything as a circle.
Oh, I love it.
So when it came back, it was not just, I want to create a TV show for me. It was, I want to create a TV show and cast all my friends. And it became about being, I referred to myself last night at the Improv as a tribe builder.
Mm.
It became about becoming a tribe builder. And I had a little bit of that before, but that my whole life became about that.
Wow.
I lost two of my best friends at the time. I lost my boyfriend at the time. They were all like, who are you? I'm like, I know, it's trippy, right? So that happened to me.
You mean your best friend and your boyfriend left you, or they
at the time, yeah, because they were used to
they
me being
you.
This
oh.
No, they didn't die.
Wow.
They were used to me being this very headstrong leader, tunnel vision,
wow,
balancing my checkbook to the cent. And suddenly I came back from this thing and I was like, what? Part of it was I had a head injury, so I couldn't remember to be that anal. And part of it was just that I was just,
wow,
it was just, it didn't seem as important as how I felt when I felt what it was like to be in the beyond.
Wow.
And then I just,
beautiful,
at one point decided to give myself a break about 10 years ago. Really when I came here to LA Talk Radio almost 10 years ago. And I thought, you know what? You can't live the rest of your life worrying about everything.
Mm.
And I started really enjoying doing 16 hours of radio a week. Force me to be in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned to love being in the moment.
I love it more than anything.
And
that's
even
I
though
thrive.
I sometimes will think I need to go home, there's so much to do, and somebody will say, can you stay for a while and sitting on my radio show? And I think, oh, I need to go home. But when I stay for the show, something miraculous happens, and suddenly I realize I'm right where I'm supposed to
be. Tonight that happened for me because you opened up things I was dying to talk about, but I've been burying them because I have these other tasks to do.
Right.
And I needed this so badly. I knew something great would come out of this, just being with you alone. But this is like a deeper soul journey. I've actually been wanting to do a show called God Shots about just mysteries, the mystery of life. I trademarked that term a few years ago. Diane Cannon kept saying, trademark the term God Shots.
I love that. I love her Facebook.
Isn't she cool?
I follow her on Facebook, and she's very esoteric and lovely.
Yeah. So I trademarked it, and I'm about to do, I want to do one called Hospice God Shots, Cancer God Shots, Children's God Shots. But I want to make it a non, I want to make it beyond a nonprofit. I want everyone to own their own book, and then they make their own money, and then they send.
It's beautiful, like Chicken Soup for the Soul, right?
Exactly.
Where it's a franchise, everybody does their own books.
But like Orphans God Shots would go, they have to at least send 20% to an orphanage,
right?
Or to the people it's going to help.
Yeah.
And then talk about synchronicities that they've
it's
found.
It's interesting that you said the word orphan, because people don't use that word that
I know,
much
it's
anymore.
A weird word, is it?
And my mother was an orphan. So that's something that's very close to my heart. And my best friend adopted a little girl. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting, because we've always been like sisters that weren't sisters, my best friend and I. And I had a Scorpio mother who was adopted, and she has a Scorpio daughter who was adopted.
Wow.
So the similarities in me being able to help her with her daughter, understanding how her daughter feels and the issues that come with you when you're an orphan, mm-hmm. because my mother had those issues. And it's interesting how you see sometimes that life doesn't change.
Right.
Feelings of abandonment, feeling like you're not worthy, and feeling like when you finally find a family, you're going to lose them. My mother had those things still at 80.
Golly.
Those are things. As a matter of fact, there was a time when I first came here to LA Talk Radio, I was at an event, and I sat down next to a well-known performer. Mm-hmm. And I had interviewed him a couple of months before, and I had read in his Wikipedia that he had been orphaned and had never been adopted and had gone right out of an orphanage and into working in an intern program. So we were sitting there, and he started telling me that no matter how much he works, no matter how much he laughs, no matter how much people tell him he's great, he always feels like he's never part of the group. He always feels like everybody likes each other. They don't like him. And those were things my mother always felt. So I just said to
him.
Did
your mom? Wow. Yeah.
I said, you know, my mom, I said, I read on your Wikipedia that you were in an orphanage. I said, my mom was in an orphanage, and she always felt the same way.
Wow.
And I'll tell you something, and I don't know this guy. I've just met him a couple times, and I said, I'll tell you something. I said, a lot of the times people did want to include her. She just never felt it. So maybe just kind of switch the way you think about it a little bit, because maybe the TV shows you've been on, maybe they did think of you as part of the family. Maybe you're not allowing yourself to feel like part of the family because you still have that orphan stuff that you carry.
Wow, that's amazing.
And I thought the poor guy was going to cry, but somebody had to tell him. I mean, the man was almost in his 80s, and nobody had ever said to him,
oh my God,
everybody loves you. This is stuff you carry with you from being an orphan.
Oh my goodness! Did your mother ever let go of that as she got older?
She let go of a lot of it through her relationship with me.
Yeah,
but there was a lot of it she never let go of. No.
Did she ever complain a lot, or reminisce, or go back in time and negatively?
Not really. She was tough.
See, that
she always made the best of everything.
Yeah.
Everything was always this too will pass,
mm-hmm.
or it was just keep laughing, kid. Those were her two things. We're going to get through this, and everything's going to be fine.
Wow.
We're going to get... When she was in her hospital bed, and she was confined to her bed, and caregivers were coming in and doing all the things they do with people when they're confined to a bed, she was still saying, it's going to get better, kid, and just keep laughing. I'll tell you a story. I had her... She got sick. She was in the hospital. Then she couldn't walk, and they put her in a rehab, and she was there for 3 months. And then I took her home to her house, and I was taking care of her. And some caregivers were coming in and helping. And in the middle, the first week we were home, one of my best friends who lives in Kentucky had a brain aneurysm. And they thought she was going to die. And it was the first day we had the caregiver coming in, and home health care was coming. So the home health care nurse was there. The caregiver was there to do the bath and the diaper and everything. The home health care nurse was talking to her. And all of a sudden, I get a text message from my friend's husband saying Jenny's had an aneurysm and they don't know if she's going to live.
God.
And my mom looked at my face and said, what's wrong? And I said, you know, my friend Jenny, she's had a brain aneurysm, and her husband just sent me a text, and they think that she might not make it. So mom has the nurse asking questions.
Yeah.
She's got the caregiver over here. They're trying to get her situated, and she looks at me, and she says, honey, I'm fine. Go out on the patio and call David, and you find out what's going on. And she sent me out there to talk to him. And because that's who, and I'm crying, that's who she was. It was always when there is an emergency,
yeah,
that comes before me.
Right.
You know, as
right,
bad as I am right now in this bed, right, I'm not having a brain aneurysm.
That's a perfect modeling behavior of an incredible human being.
And that's just, that's so,
that's
no,
how
she
you
didn't,
teach, you she, model.
She, I don't think she did enough talking about how upset she was about the past. I think, Lydia, that she pushed it down,
yeah,
too much. I wish she had just said more. It scared the hell out of me, and it made me so sad. And but
how
she
long
was,
did she live in an orphanage?
Her mother died right after she turned six, but she was in the hospital for a while before that. So she lost her when she was 5 and a half.
Wow.
And then she got adopted. She was almost 12.
Wow, God, you're kidding.
I and during the Depression,
like,
and so during the crop season,
oh my goodness,
people would adopt her. And as the people would bring her as a foster parent, and they'd take her home and make her plow the fields while their kids sat on the patio and drank lemonade and laughed.
Oh,
and then
God,
at the end, when the crops were all harvested, they would take her back and say, nah, we've decided we're not going to adopt her.
Harvest.
And then the next year, somebody else would do it. Basically, slave
Isn't that
labor.
Weird? You know what's weird about that era?
There weren't rules. This was pre-New Deal. There were not,
yeah,
rules then.
Exactly. And in that era, even George Burns talks about how he was a street urchin at four, stealing things at,
yeah,
4 and 5 years old. And nobody thought kids were that cute back then. They used them as...
Yeah.
What, chattel?
They made
them
work in factories.
Is that bizarre?
Yeah.
We
there were no laws.
The boomers, I'm not quite a boomer, I'm a younger boomer, but we worship our children almost too much. It's like we all had children going, I'm so grateful to have a child.
Yeah.
You know, like we've overdone it.
Do you feel like a boomer? Or do you feel more like Gen X?
A younger. Or like, what's the thing? What'd you say?
Gen X. I'm Gen X.
I feel more like a Gen X. So I've always
related.
I think
related. Gen X started in 1960. So I'm 67. I'm almost right in the middle.
Yeah, I'm older than you, but I've never felt older than 39 like Jack Benny. I just feel like I'm always...
I feel 15.
Yeah. I don't age. I don't believe in age. I don't believe we should... I don't believe in disease very much. I don't give a lot of credence or power to anything I don't feel like having in my reality.
That's very Christian Science.
Yeah. But it works.
I feel like I'm part 15 and part 150. Because I feel like, yeah, part of me lives in the 1800s.
Right.
And part of
That's
me lives.
Wonderful.
But I don't feel like any of me lives like in the 1950s. Like I don't really have any connection to
Not
that.
At all.
That let's take America backwards kind of a thing.
God, me either.
I feel like part of me, because I love the, I know there were a lot of things about the 1800s sociopolitically that just sucked. But I loved the manners and the letter writing and the people coming to the
and
door
the mystery,
and
the sexual mystery.
Oh, the sexual mystery.
I'm so
cool
tired
too.
Of everything being out there.
Yeah.
I like mystery is more sexy and beautiful than
there's no mystery anymore.
Romance.
Yeah.
Even covered piano legs. That was Victorian era though.
Yeah, I like that too.
They even covered the piano legs.
And so but it was interesting when I said the thing about the Civil War days. You said that you wanted to go to something like that.
I love to go to a reenactment. I would love to.
No,
I love.
You've never been to one?
No, I'm dying to go to one. I thought you had to go to Williamsburg, Virginia to do those.
No, that's revolutionary. And Gettysburg by Civil. All the Gettysburg battles do it.
Well, of
but
course.
Some people just have gatherings. They do have a reenactment at this. They have battles. But this isn't an actual battle site, obviously. It's Huntington
fun.
Beach. But they do, it's like a gathering where people that reenact for a living come and play Civil War for a weekend.
It'd be fun.
It's really beautiful. If you want to come down Labor Day weekend, come with me.
When do you go?
The second and third of September?
That'd be so much fun. Do you dress up?
I don't know. I want
That's
to, but I don't have an outfit right now. Do you have an 1800s outfit?
No, I loved it.
Oh.
I'm actually not. In my fantasy, I like the idea. And then when it comes down to dressing up, I'd rather just go and hang out.
Okay, that's what I do. I just go hang out. But I have started eyeing outfits. Because if I'm going to be part of this family, and they do it every year, eventually I'm going to have to dress up.
There's something about America right now where we're childish in a wonderful cartoon-like way.
Yeah.
My caregiver has a friend who's a doctor, believe it or not.
Okay.
He's a giant. He's a really tall guy, and this sounds crazy, but he actually believes he's part wolf. So
oh.
he starts to when he has an ache in his shoulder, he goes, "That's just my wolf coming out." And I had to start laughing. But I mean, a lot of people are play acting and role playing in our society
right
now.
No, but does he really believe that?
Yeah, he believes he's you know, X-Men or something, part wolf, part man.
But there are many people who believe, at one point I joked, because I do a spiritual paranormal show on a playground here once a week, that I was going to start a website called areyouahybrid.com and let people put up all their stories of how they think they're hybrids. Because
oh my God.
Lot of people think they're alien hybrids.
Yeah.
A lot of people think they're angel hybrids. A lot of people think they have
really?
Fairy DNA.
Wow.
Apparently he thinks he has wolf DNA.
Yeah.
Some people think they're part earth spirit of some kind. I don't know. Chupacabra. People think
all
they're
things. All this stuff is fascinating.
But what if they are?
What if they are? Exactly.
What if it is? What if everybody's not entirely human?
The show I love the most of any show in my life is X-Files. It's my favorite show ever. Okay. And I remember being abducted.
Oh, my goodness.
Wait, no, I don't
remember. That's a whole other thing for Haunted Playground.
Wait. I don't remember being abducted.
Are you
but
sure?
I did once in my life
okay.
at the age of 12, 11, I went to a slumber party, and everyone watched me walk out the door in the morning, and I disappeared for a couple hours, and to this day, I don't know where I went. I was found in the backyard, and I woke up a few blocks away with a woman looking out her window calling the police because I was in her backyard in pajamas. And I don't know, it was in El Paso in the desert. I do wonder what that chip is in my shoulder here, but I don't know. Who knows what happened?
Really?
Yeah.
Because that's a typical abduction story.
Seriously? But I don't remember anything.
But that's the typical abduction story.
Wow.
There's many stories about people who...
I haven't wanted to talk about this yet.
Well, I'll tell you what I never talk about because I owe you one right now. There are many stories of people who... They're going somewhere, and they open up the trunk of the car, and 4 hours later, they wake up in a park laying on a blanket.
Oh my God.
And they have no idea how they got there. And then later, through hypnotherapy, they realize they were abducted.
Wow.
So I'll tell a story I've never told on this show. I don't think I've ever told this on any show.
Okay.
Even on my spiritual show. So maybe I have told it on Haunted Playground once. I don't know. Maybe not. So I lived for 15 years with two musicians in relationships back to back who'd never slept.
Oh my God.
So when you live with an insomniac, you're always sleeping with the lights on, they're reading next to you, the TV's on. So in the middle of one of those relationships, one of them went out of town for 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh my God, fantastic. I'm going to turn off all the lights, I'm going to go to sleep at 10 o'clock, and I'm going to sleep in peace. So I went to sleep with the light off. There were people in the pool outside my window. I could hear their radio. I could hear them dancing around in the pool. I could hear the splashing. So I don't know how long I was asleep, but I woke up, and there were small creatures walking around my bed.
Oh my
and
God.
They were holding little clipboards, and they were walking around the bed. And I could still hear the music, and I could still hear the splashing. And I thought, I don't know what this is.
What?
But I don't want any part of it. And I closed my eyes and I went back to sleep and I woke up, I don't know how much later. I could still hear the music and the splashing, but the little things were gone. Okay. So, a year later,
wow.
They discovered a giant 13.5-pound fibroid tumor in my stomach and I had a hysterectomy.
Oh my God.
And they said, do you want us to take your ovary? Now, I had lost one ovary to endometriosis in my 20s in one tube. And I said, yeah, take it all out. I don't want any more trouble with it. Just take it.
Right.
When they went to do the hysterectomy, they couldn't find my ovary. And that was the ovary that was trouble. My left one that was good was the one I wound up losing. The right one that had always given me trouble was gone.
Oh my God, how weird.
It was always forming
cysts.
And it was gone. He said, I looked for it for 45 minutes, and I just couldn't keep you out any longer. We don't know where it is. Sometimes they just dry up and go away.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
So about a year after my surgery, I have a new guest on the show who's a psychic medium and a demonologist. And after she does the show, she interestingly enough, a friend of my friend that had the aneurysm, she calls me up and she says, I have messages for you. Call me. And I thought, oh God, psychics always want to tell me stuff. And I had a psychic mother and I don't want to know.
Uh-oh.
So after about the fourth phone call, she called me. She's like, look, I know you don't want to take this call, but they're not going to leave me alone till I give you the messages. So just let me give you the messages.
Right.
So I called her back. And the first half an hour of the conversation was her in great detail describing to me somebody that I dream about that I have never met and I had never told anybody in my life about. And I thought, okay, now you have my attention. And then she said, tell me what happened during your near-death experience. And at the time, I wasn't talking about it. And she knew about how I was in the car, how I drove through the wall, the guy that was in the car, what he looked like, the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
And then she said, tell me about the time you saw the aliens.
Oh God, and I just got chills.
I said, I did. No idea what you're talking about. She's like, yeah, yeah, you don't. Tell me about what happened with the aliens. So I told her the story. And then she said, and then you had a surgery last year.
Oh my God.
And I said, uh-huh.
Oh my God.
And she said, when they went in to do the hysterectomy,
oh my God,
what was missing?
Your ovary.
And I said, I had never thought about it. I said, my right ovary. And she said, they knew it was trouble.
Oh no.
And they came and they took it out.
You're kidding.
And I said, what? And I mean, just take the story for what it's worth. I'm just telling
you
the story.
Didn't they want it to use for their own purposes?
No, she said they knew that it was going to become trouble.
Wow.
And they took it out.
They were helpful to you.
Yeah. She said, you know, they watch over you. And
oh
I said,
goodness.
God, why would they watch over me? And she said, you know why. And I thought, oh, well, interestingly enough, my mother believed that they took her and abducted her. She thought that had happened. And she even had little scars that looked
wow.
like triangles that would turn up places.
Really?
And she would say, I swear, they take me at night sometimes. And I'd be like, I don't want to know, not in my house.
Oh, my God.
Needless to say, I never slept with the lights out again. But that just take that story for what it's worth.
Is that true? You still sleep with the lights on?
I always sleep with a light on.
Wow.
Not since that night that thing happened. I've never slept with a light on.
So these little creatures, what did they look like?
They looked like little
goblins?
Small. They were goblin-y, yes. And they were probably about 2.5 feet high.
You're kidding.
And they were just walking around the bed making notes.
With clipboards.
With little clipboards. There was a whole bunch of them.
That's weird.
And they were writing. And they were just making notes. And they were walking all around the bed.
I believe it.
And I thought, I don't know what it was. And I mean, if I know it was a night terror, okay, maybe it was. I have friends, and I just thought, you know what, if I just go to sleep, they will go away. If I just ignore them,
yeah.
they will go away.
How interesting.
But I've had night terrors, and I grew up in a haunted house, and I know what all that's like. And this was very, very different. I have never had anything like this happen before or after.
I believe you. I've had some strange things happen, too, that I can't explain.
But that is a strange thing with you and the disappearing
wow,
time.
Wow, that's weird. It sounds like it makes sense in a strange way.
I mean,
There's so much we don't know.
Have you ever had hypnotherapy?
I know. I tried to take a class in Tarzana called hypnotherapy so I could overcome my own, you know, procrastination, stuff like that.
Really?
Yeah.
There's hypnotherapy?
With Lupe Zuniga, yeah.
To overcome procrastination?
Yes, anything that's holding you back.
Okay.
So,
do you worry about that?
That
you're not being productive enough and you're not...
Well, I love to dawdle. I'm wondering, what is this? I'd like to make a living out of piddling.
But
I write comedy 24 hours a day. I have 800 pages in a thing called Recovered Humor because my hard drive crashed and I recovered files, so it's called Recovered Humor. But I write comedy all day long, humor, with deep stuff and stories. So I'm a storyteller. It's just that I keep trying to fit myself into a box of the 9-to-5 work life, and I don't fit that box. So I just want to be happy with whatever's going on right now. I've had some really mystical experiences with playing with time.
Okay.
Beautiful stuff. It's wonder. It was like when I went through this divorce, my husband left me. I always write this. My opening line in my book goes, I was trying to become more shallow so I could communicate with my husband. And it was finally working when he left me for Gene Simmons. He went on the road with Kiss, abandoning our two sons, abandoning the marriage and leaving me alone and to raise the aliens. And I raised 3 boys and 2 dogs, including my husband, and they all went through puberty at the same time. So I have a lot of low-life humor.
Yeah.
But
that's okay. Who are the
during
aliens?
During the divorce, the children.
Oh,
boys.
Okay.
Raising aliens, life with boys.
Oh, I like it. Okay.
Yeah. And living with a Neanderthal. Those are two of the big stories
okay.
in my book. That are going to be a TV show now. But I did have these wonderful, incredible experiences with... During my divorce, I was grieving the end of my marriage. I remember saying goodbye to my husband, and I said, it's nice knowing you. It was nice knowing you after 12 years of marriage. And when his kid went on the road with him for the Kiss tour, and my son went to New York to visit his dad...
Okay.
Or they went on a trip somewhere. I was left in this big haunted house. Haunted meaning grieving house.
Okay.
Of everyone gone but me. In
okay.
An English Tudor house. And
you're in Los Angeles.
In Beverly
okay.
Hills. I could not stay in that house alone.
I don't blame you.
I ran outside. The house, I couldn't even go in my stepson's room. I was never going to see him again. He was leaving, and then he was going to start a new high school at the age of 14. And my son was 16. And that door to his room, I couldn't even bring myself to go in there because his little baby handprints were dipped in blue paint and on the walls in the closet. And I knew I was going to miss him. He was my baby. I raised him since he was four. And he had brittle bone disease, osteogenesis imperfecta. And he couldn't touch his chin. And so he was my little open-hearted stepson angel. I love him. And my son was always kind of very smart, very together. And they fought. But anyway, I went outside and I sat on the grass of our yard and I was grieving, that heaving, sobbing, burning hurt deep in your heart. Heartache, true heartache. It wasn't that I was so madly in love with my husband, who was really a funny guy. It was that I wanted that white picket fence life. I wanted this marriage. I wanted it to last. And he betrayed me, right? So I sit on the lawn. And I looked up and I saw a fig tree, a big fig leaf. And I went, I never knew we had a fig tree. In the 10 years, in the 12 years of that marriage, I was so unconscious. I never looked up. I was so busy with Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh parties and making everyone happy and making my husband happy and raising boys. And I never stopped. And I looked up and I saw a fig tree. It had no figs on it. And in those 10 years of that house, I kind of resented the fact that no figs ever came. Mm-hmm. By the end of this year, though, at the end of my incredible year of growing and learning, it was full of figs. My life had come to fruition.
Wow.
At the end of that year. But I had to go through this. You have to go through it to get... The only way out is through.
Yes.
The pain.
And it's hard.
Right. It's hard. But yeah. I grieved. I was crying. And I remember sitting there crying so hard. And suddenly I was shocked out of my grief by a huge swallowtail butterfly. It almost felt surreal, like it was something was... The universe, I call it God sometimes. I'm not religious, but I love the word God, the small g.
I have no problem with the word God.
It's a beautiful word. Good orderly direction,
G-O-D. It's all the same. God, exactly. The universe, source, what higher power, whatever you want to call it.
It looked like it was posing for me. It came over and hovered around me, two butterflies circling my head. And it was so beautiful. These things shocked me out of my grief. It was an external act, not just internal, of such great beauty, these tiger swallowtails. I started laughing. And it was as if a butterfly, it means transformation, right?
Sure.
It's like a spiritual plastic surgery.
And also new awakening, because it goes into
new
the cocoon and then
rebirth.
It comes out and it's rebirth, yeah.
And I felt so delighted in the middle of my grief, like a child, born again. And I started following these butterflies around and looking for them every day. And then I started studying the monarch. I wanted to see a monarch in person. I'd never seen one. And that very weekend of my grief, I was invited to go to an autistic event for autism, for kids with autism, in Del Mar. And they gave me a hotel suite on the beach. And the gift was a free trip to the San Diego Zoo. And I went to the zoo, and I went alone. It was a cathartic day of just in delighting in nature and being totally present, right? And I kept enjoying the day so much. I was so in the moment of gratitude at every moment with orangutans. A peacock came over, opened his entire feathers, and he posed and modeled for me like on the runway.
Oh.
I was the only one delighting in it with a little baby, a little toddler, and I. All the parents were milling around jaded looking at their watches.
Where's my phone? What time's lunch?
And so this peacock, I was going, oh my God, have you ever seen anything so beautiful? That night, I get home, I drove all the way from San Diego, and what is waiting for me at my front door but a monarch, sitting on a white rose, just waiting.
Wow.
And it dawned on me, and here's the thought that came from the higher source. The universe is interactive. It wants to play with you. It wants to give you everything you desire. But we never stop long enough to appreciate the moment we're in.
Yes.
The moment I just gave so much joy, that day was full of joy, where I was playing with the universe. It needs playmates. It wants to show off for us. But we don't stop long enough to appreciate anything. We're so worried about the future or the past. We live in regret of the past, fear of the future.
Yes.
We're never present enough. The present moment is where God is.
Yeah.
And the universe expands. There's no age or time or disease.
Yep.
And that came to me, and that was the greatest gift of that summer. Was that it just waited for me, and I thought, what a sweet gift. Yeah. Gave me back this beautiful gift.
Well, and that was the rebirth of you. Even though that was a very hard time, you were boxed into your life. You were cocooned into your life.
Wow.
And this was your chance to finally break out of that cocoon and let your wings flap for the first time.
That's it.
And really be free. Because I think from we're born free.
Yeah.
And then humans entangle us into unfreedom, starting with our parents.
Yeah, right.
And then our entire life is trying to get back to freedom.
That's right.
You know, you asked me when you did my daily show earlier today, you asked me if as an off-color, you know, character-looking girl, if that was something that had always been hard for me. Mm. And it wasn't until my 40s when I came here to LA Talk Radio and had a huge, big spiritual renaissance when I started my daily show here, mm-hmm. that I realized that who I was when I was 15, that was me. And I let myself get off that track mm-hmm. for almost 30 years by trying to become who people told me I should be
right,
and not
right.
who I organically was.
Wow,
and
exactly.
it took me all that time, all that undoing and pulling off all those layers to get back to who I was always supposed to be.
I love
which
it.
Was who I started out being anyhow.
Right, exactly.
And I think you find that a lot. I work a lot with people that have gifts, psychic gifts, and don't know it, spiritual gifts. As a kid, you know you have those gifts. You talk to your mm-hmm. imaginary mm-hmm. friends. See my finger quotes? You talk to grandma who's dead who comes to visit you. And then somebody tells you, well, you never saw that.
Yeah.
Points a finger at you.
Right.
And it takes years to come back to realizing, oh, that's what that was. That was why I saw that. That was why that happened.
Oh, wow.
So much of, I think, the soul school of being a human being
right.
is unraveling that.
So we have to go through that journey, the
Absolutely.
Journey of falling down or going through the fire and having suffering.
Pushing sometimes, through.
Sometimes people don't recover from that, though, the box they're in either. Like the box I was in for showbiz was... It's been a really hard one to get out
Absolutely.
Of.
Absolutely.
Always worrying how you look, and if you look good enough, and your fans expect you to look good in person. And
you're not enough of this, and you're too much of this. And
yeah.
I do that even. Last night at the improv, I was all worried about what should I wear and what should I do, and I finally thought, you know what? I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care. I'm just going to do... Just show up in something
right.
and people will love me.
Exactly.
But I used to worry, like, if I didn't have enough celebrities there, would people stop coming? And when I stopped worrying about that,
right.
people started coming just because they like seeing me.
Oh, my God. I love
but
you for that. That is the greatest sentence.
Worrying because, about yeah. things that you put those worries on people. Will people not love me if I don't have classic TV stars
yeah, what
there?
What is that? Yeah, well, we're good enough as we are.
People who want that, they don't need to be around me anyhow. You know, that's but also with you, and if I may speak honestly, and mm-hmm. you know, again, not my business, that if my friend likes to say that and $2 will get you $2.
Mm-hmm.
You're a highly intelligent person in a world that's not really designed for highly intelligent people. And I think a lot of your worries that you procrastinate or you're not doing enough, mm-hmm. are you putting too much pressure on yourself?
Yeah, totally.
Because a lot of people I know have not written or developed or done as much stuff as you've done creatively.
Yeah.
But you're always worried that you're not doing enough.
Well, but it's all ready to come out now. I felt like I just sit on my work. I used to put one guy, and I wrote a very funny scene in this. I gave my Venus Conspiracy script, which is really a provocative, innovative script, to a guy, to a woman friend of mine at Paramount Studios, and she was a backstabber. At the
okay.
time. I didn't realize it.
Happens.
And I said, whatever you do, don't give this to the coverage department. I don't want them to kill it. Coverage is where they kill a script. It's a place where kids read, you know, they hire you by the hour to
right.
read a script.
They get the red pen out.
Yeah. And she calls me the week later. She goes, hi, coverage just sent your script back. And I went, oh. And she gave me the notes. And a guy named David Deutsch, to this day, I'll remember his name. He wrote, why would anyone think women have problems? Pretty women don't have problems. There's no such thing as... you make the protagonist a man, maybe I'll read this thing with a serious eye. This is in the 90s, right?
Ugh.
I literally went into hospital the next day for a CAT scan and a spinal tap. I fainted. I had the brain flu or whatever. That's how deep this was. It was my baby I gave someone. And it was a wild comedy. It was just a crazy wild comedy. But it hurt me so deeply that... A couple weeks later, I was at a coffee house on a date with a guy, and there was a man across the coffee house giving me a dirty look, and I thought, he's got to be, it's David Deutsch. I know it. He knows who I am. He read the script, and he hates my guts. And I'm going to go pour hot coffee on his head. And I got up to confront him. And then he comes over with a smoldering, first I thought it was a hateful look. It was a smoldering look. And he says, Were you on Too Close for Comfort? Can I get your autograph?
Oh, my God. That's fantastic.
And I was going to kill him. I was going to confront him and say, you jerk. Are you David Deutsch?
Oh, my God. That is fantastic.
So that's like most of my stories.
So he's like your Sherlock Holmes Moriarty. Like, he hangs in the periphery of your spiritual vengeance.
Yeah, I got to
find
this guy.
Oh, my God. David Deutsch. He's planning every...
He was a 21-year-old summer intern.
Every time I procrastinate, it's because of David Deutsch. I think you should let me find him on Facebook. I'm really good at that.
Guy.
We're going to find him on Facebook. Yeah, but you see, that again is you putting too much pressure on
yourself.
But at
least I turned into humor. So at least it's going to be
an episode. And you're wonderful. And I think you're fantastic. And I'm in awe of how much you've written.
It's my tragedy turned into comedy. I have a million stories like that.
How many stories you've written? I'm in awe of how much you're writing.
Thank you.
The fact that you don't think that you're producing enough.
Well, it's just a matter of getting it out to the world. It's there. Then I go, uh-oh, better change that paragraph. No.
Don't.
I'm done with that now.
Let everybody
tonight,
just have it as is.
I'm finished with that, yeah.
Good. So because of tonight.
Because of tonight.
Be finished with that.
I am.
And be okay.
Thank you.
When I write for I'mRaisingTheVibration.com, and I try to write every day, but I get behind sometimes when I get busy, I sometimes think, oh, God, I shouldn't put that. And then I thought, no, you know what? What you should put is what is the pure channel from your heart to the page.
Yeah,
and if people don't like it, if something in there doesn't resonate with someone, then it's not for them. And maybe tomorrow's will resonate them.
Right.
You know, my mom used to say all the time, you can't please all the people all the time.
Right.
And there's no way that you can create something that everyone is going to like. It's an absolute impossibility.
Exactly.
So just put out what's in your heart. Put out the story the way you want it to be. And let it organically fall on the ears and the souls and the hearts it's supposed to
and
fall
on.
And
that act alone is the alchemy, is the mechanism for just, it moves you forward. It moves you out of the ego and out of the fear and out of all that. Just go forward.
And then when some muckety-muckety David Deutsch comes up to you in a $10,000 suit and says, I'm going to give you money if you take this much out of it, then at that point you decide,
at that point,
do I want the money?
Right.
Or do I want to keep it organically what I want to keep it and produce it independently? And then it's all 100% your choice. It's another thing, I think we worry so much that everything in the world is out of our control.
Mm.
But things aren't really out of our control. Well, first of all, everything is out of our control with the universe.
Mm-hmm.
But specifically in our lives, we allow ourselves to think things are out of our control. You always have a decision. You always have a choice.
Yes, you always do. And that's
you
the
can always say
feeling
no.
in the world.
If you don't want to do anything anymore, where people judge you by how you look, then you look exactly how you want to look, and either you'll get cast or you won't, and be okay with that.
Yeah, exactly.
I had to finally do that with relationships. I had to finally get to the point where I said, either somebody is going to love me for me,
mm-hmm.
or I'm just not, and it's okay. It's
oh,
okay
it's
either
so
way.
Wonderful. I'm looking forward to this. I'm close. I can feel it.
Yeah.
I'm getting rid of
if
that.
If somebody doesn't love you for you, they're
yeah.
not supposed to be there.
Exactly, right?
It's just not, you know what I mean?
It's kind of awkward when people sext you.
Do people sext?
Yes,
no one's
lately.
Ever
it's weird.
Well, that's not true that no one's ever sexed me. There are some odd people that have. I have been sexed. Yeah,
I was going to throw that in.
Do you get a lot of that?
A couple. But
do you
I'm
get a lot of people
it's a lot of pressure.
That still
like,
think it's
really
1982
wanna...
and you're on Too Close for Comfort and they think you're that character?
Yeah. And there's still, back in the day though, Deborah Von Valkenburg and I would be out shopping at Bullock's in those days.
Oh, I loved Bullock's.
I remember? And you'd hear the fans behind you going, those are the girls from Too Close for Comfort. The brunette's calves are kind of fat. The blonde has a big pimple on her nose or something. They would like look at you. And
oh
we go, we're not
God.
Cardboard cutouts for your viewing pleasure. We're human beings.
Oh, my
beings.
God.
So you got this weird feeling like you're not really allowed to be a little bit human at times. And then, as you
I think every public figure feels that way.
Well, TMZ actually zoomed in on Zac Efron's earwax in a picture. And I'm going, they're going too far. You're not allowed to have a human moment.
And what do their ears look like?
Exactly.
I mean, these people that we talked a little bit in the last show about politics, and we talked, I guess, a little bit in this show too, but we talked about the campaign and about, you know, the way people, candidates were criticized. And and it's like, you people that are criticizing how everybody looks and dresses and feels and laughs and smiles, and what do you look like?
What are you wearing?
You should have to put out your picture. Exactly. We want to see you right now wearing sweatpants in grandma's garage. What are you doing?
Exactly.
But I see a lot of that. I'll tell you an odd story that you might not think is vibrational raising, but so when I was on working on the Howard Stern station before I was here, I worked on KLSX for 7 years, and because I was a character actress looking girl, they always paired me up with a hot blonde. So I was paired up with a penthouse pet, and we were at a appearing at a kind of a Taste of LA, might even have been Taste of LA. So we were out in Santa Monica appearing at this food event.
Oh, yeah.
This guy comes walking up, and I mean, I was heavier at the time, but he was easily 2 meters.
Right.
And he was walking on two canes. And he and I was the one who answered all the email and did everything for the fan email because, you know, the hot girls were off doing their hot things for money.
Ugh.
And which is fine.
Yeah,
I mean, if you got it, use it. So
meat.
He comes walking up on the two canes, and he wants to talk to my co-host.
Mm-hmm.
And she was off taking a smoke break in the back, but I wasn't supposed to say where she was at the time because nobody smoked.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know what? She's taking a little break. She's not here, but hi, I'm Sheena. It's great to meet you. And he said, I don't want to talk to you. You're the fat one.
Oh, my God. How horrifying.
And I thought, does the what?
Oh my God.
Does the irony just completely elude him?
Oh,
does he not have a mirror?
Right.
How could somebody who looks like that judge you for looking like you? But we deal with that. And that was really before the internet.
Mm-hmm.
That was before social media. There was internet then, but there wasn't really social media. Now social media has given everyone the excuse, right?
Yeah.
To become the judger.
I have a whole thing in here about that. I was looking for in my humor files about a guy, the same thing. He goes, something about having a hot car and men judging women for their looks and we're judging men for their hot other
sure.
things. It's just exactly on the money what you said. It is so ridiculous.
Well, I had a friend tell me last night that
that's
a woman
sexy.
He was dating used a very, unflattering word about, basically called him a loser. Okay, I said
mm-hmm.
it. And I said, look, if somebody claims to care about you, they should never call you a loser. And he said, but, you know, really, I don't make all that much money, so maybe she had the right. And I thought, wait a minute. If you're not taking anybody else's money, you don't have a right to call somebody names because they're not making as much money as you wish they were making. If you want somebody who makes more money, then you go find that.
Right.
But you can't call somebody names because. But I think women do that to men, right? All men are supposed to be rich, and all women are supposed to be hot.
I guess so. This is the thing I wrote. There's this guy I know who had a shitty car but refused to date plain-looking women. He told me he was offended when gorgeous women judged him by his car and refused to date him. I told him he had a lot of nerve expecting girls to be pretty. He is choosing superficial girls who only like guys with hot cars, and he's wondering why these girls aren't deep enough to see what a great guy he is. Can't he see that he's as superficial as they are? He wants them to respect him for his shitty car, yet he won't tolerate them being unpretty.
Same. Yeah, thing. Very common.
Yeah.
And I've even said to friends, people I know who are like that, I said, why don't you just find somebody who's nice? Not somebody who's rich, not somebody who's hot. How about just somebody who's
somebody
nice?
Somebody you can grow with.
And they flat out said, I can't do it. If they're not hot, I'm not interested.
Oh, my.
First
serious?
Of all, then I think, do
they
you have a
They actually admitted that?
Yeah. Yeah. I knew a guy once that his whole life was prostitutes. And isn't there wrong with being a prostitute? A girl's got to make a living as a girl's got to make a living. But
profession.
He had all these girls coming in, and he was sad that none of them loved him. And I said, honey, why don't you just go find a nice girl? And he said, do you mean like a fat, average-looking girl? And he was, you know, Humpty Dumpty.
Oh,
and I said, I just mean like a normal-looking girl. And he said, I can't do that. I only want to date girls that look like they're in magazines.
Oh, my God. You just put the... Now
I said, even if you're have to pay for it?
Right.
And he said, yeah, I'm not going to date somebody who's not hot.
That's it.
And that's not vibration raising. And we are completely out of time.
Oh, my God.
Thank you for filling in for Ernest. Ernest went to the improv.
Mm-hmm.
instead of coming here.
Oh, no.
So he's going to be here with us next week. You are a goddess for staying for this whole show.
This was meant to be.
It was meant to be. Where can people find you online, my friend?
LydiaCornell.com. LydiaCornell. LydiaCornell.com.
Everybody do that. Go there and do that. And if you miss those links, you can go to Raising the Vibration Radio. You can go to LA Talk Radio. You can find me everywhere at ChinaMetal.com, at ChinaMetal on social media. And please join us at I Am Raising the Vibration of the Nation and the World at IamRaisingTheVibration.com and at RaisingTheVibration.org. It's Raising the Vibration right here on LA Talk Radio every Monday from 7 to 9 p.m. I feature people that I adore who really understand what it's about to make the world a better place, who understand that we need to live in a world that is kinder, gentler, more peaceful, more loving, more unified, to find people at their source and love them for who they are, and to always, always be thinking of ways to put more good and more light into the world. Until I see you next week, keep being kind, keep loving. Keep being the beautiful souls that I know you are. Keep thinking of peace and unity. And I will see you next time. And for please, if you could do one thing for me, just keep raising the vibration. I love you all, and I'll see you next Monday.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.